Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Nats Town. Welcome to Nats Nightly, sponsored by the District Sports page and FederalBaseball.com. There's baseball being played, so we're back on the air. Some of you after the Nats 3-1 loss to the New York Mets in the season opener today in Nationals Park. Dave, we'll start with you. We're sitting right next to each other watching the game. Max Scherzer on the mound for the first time after signing his 7-year, $210 million deal, coming off a 5.6 F4 season with the Detroit Tigers in his fifth year with the Tigers. Issues a leadoff walk and then retires 17 straight batters before he walks Granderson again in the sixth inning. E6 follows that. The Mets' first hit comes after that, a two-run single by Lucas Duda puts the Mets up 2-1. What really cost the Nats there, though, a pop by David Wright after the walk. Ian Desmond makes his way all the way over from short into short right field for some reason, calls off Dan Uglin and lets the ball drop in, and then the first hit of the game comes after that, ended up being the two runs that ended up winning the game for the Mets, Dave.
Well, obviously, Scherzer can't pitch under adversity. You know, he gives up the error and then and gives up the base hit. So obviously he's a head case, and we probably shouldn't be paying attention to him anymore. But he was terrific. I mean, just absolutely as advertised. He obviously didn't want any part of Granderson since he walked him twice. But just a terrific outing for him, and just a shame that the defense wasn't there to support him today.
So, I guess I know you were in the stands watching the game tonight. Nice to see Max Scherzer go out there and really put together a great effort, even though the defense kind of let him down, but signs that big contract this year, making a lot of money for the Nationals, and he went out there and did exactly what they expected from him.
I got to tell you, anyone who watched Curtis Granderson twice in the same game owes me some of his $30 million back for this year. That's all I'm saying. I am brought to you today by DC Brow's the Stone of Arbowath Scotch Ale from the District Draft Stand up on the 300 level. And being as strong Scotch Ale as it was, wasn't quite strong enough for some of the regrettable fielding that we saw on what was otherwise quite a well and tightly played game today. And so frustrating. Mad Max comes out there and has, by any objective standard, a terrific outing, even with the two walks to Granderson. Frustrating. So far, seems worth the money, but wow, Desmond, what are you doing, man? Are they hazing him like they used to haze Zimmerman? They won't score runs for him or just give him one and then make niggling little errors and force him to throw the perfect game? I thought we were past this, Matt. I thought we were past this.
Dave, this is yet again, the last two seasons we've seen Ian Desmond kind of struggle defensively early, kind of make a lot of errors, and then settle into the position going along in the season. Both errors today cost the Nats. You threw away one in the seventh inning, bounced a throw over to Zimmerman on a Juan Lagares grounder to short. Zimmerman tried to make a swiping backhand play but couldn't do it. The next at bat, Travis d'Arnaud, the Mets catcher, hits a triple to center that Michael Taylor tracks to the wall but can't bring down. Mets score their third run there, end up winning 3-1. Desmond, is this just one of those things with him where he needs to warm up a little and get into it? I've talked to a few beat writers who saw him regularly in spring training, said he didn't look particularly sharp defensively then either.
Well, it's tough to take because we've seen Desmond turn into a pretty quality fielder the last couple of seasons, and to see these mistakes repeat during April is tough to take. Matt Williams in his post-game press conference accused Desmond of being a little overzealous, and quite frankly, that's the most honest or most polite way, I should say, of a manager essentially blaming his player for making a mistake. And Desmond, to his credit, took full responsibility during the post-game press conference. But the bottom line is that Dan Uglin was camped under that ball. It was his ball all the way. It was a pop-up to second base. And even at that, the second player that could have made a play on it was Michael Taylor, because Taylor was standing right behind Uglin by the time the ball came down. And Desmond just kept drifting to his left and drifting to his left and drifting to his left and called off, the guy whose ball it was to make the play. Whether it's a case of him trying to do too much or amped up for opening day, we know he's an emotional player, but that's just a mistake that can't happen. The throw, stuff's going to happen. You know, it was a hard-hit ball. He made a nice backhanded scoop and then bounced the throw. That's going to happen. But the pop-up, there's just absolutely no excuse for that. I mean, he took the responsibility for it, but still, it's a little league play, and he blew it.
Yeah, when I was writing up the postgame, I had to go back and look because I was thinking maybe it was a left-hander and they were in a shift, so he had a reason for being over there. But no, he came all the way over from short to short right field and then pretty much got in Ugla's way. Matt Williams said he was pretty sure Dan Ugla was going to pull that one down, but wasn't able to do it. He gets called off. Ian Desmond drops it, and that was essentially the game there for the Nationals and Scherzer. While we're on the subject, though, Dan Ugla, doghouse, put together a big spring, ocular motor dysfunction that was caused by a couple of hit-by-pitches to the head, undiagnosed concussions are seemingly behind him, really hit well this spring. I kind of never guessed he'd be the opening day second baseman for the Nationals, even when they signed him. I figured he was going to, you know, if he did well, he'd end up getting a job somewhere else, but makes the opening day roster, ends up the opening day second baseman, might not hang around for too long after Anthony Rendon comes back. I imagine Yunel Escobar is going to go back over to second base as originally planned, and Dan Ugla doesn't make a whole lot of sense as a bench player on this team. I kind of like Danny Espinosa better as a backup infielder. He's better at short, and Ugla's kind of limited to one position, but good story, if nothing else, that Ugla's able to come back after a couple years of struggles with the concussion symptoms and the ocular motor dysfunction.
Yeah, if for no other reason than that the Braves are paying him $13.5 million this year, I kind of want to see Dan Ugla succeed. And I actually caught myself defending him to another one of the season ticket holders who sits in front of me, and we often yell incoherently throughout the game together. And I pointed out that, you know, even when Ugla struggled, he had good plate discipline, and, you know, he's got that great power out of those Popeye arms of his. And this right before he popped up in his first at bat, before going 0-3 with a K today. But I will point out that he, for the balls that were hit to him today, he fielded them and he made on target throws. I think he had 3-4 threes today, and he was camped out under that pop fly. I just, in the back of my head, I'm wondering if Desmond's thinking, man, that's Ugla over there. I got to get to that ball. You know, I don't care if it's a little league pop-up. I got to get over there. You know, it's Ugla. But, you know, maybe some of that's familiarity. Maybe that's sort of opening night opening day passion, getting the better of your good judgment. I will note that on that error on his throw to first, I'm pretty sure Adam LaRoche makes that play and saves that error. And that may just be a matter of familiarity. And, you know, I'll give you, that was a tough play. It was the in-between hop there, and that's coming sort of at an angle that Zimmerman isn't used to fielding. And I'm hoping that by the middle of the season, that's an error that Zimmy saves.
Well, Doghouse makes a good point on the throw, because that's a play where a left-handed first baseman is facing the throw and can try to make the scoop with his right hand, as opposed to a right-handed first baseman trying to make the backhand facing away from the throw.
What do you think about Ryan Zimmerman's work over there? We did see him make one nice pick on a sharp grounder, hit his way. Otherwise, the error there on Desmond when Zimmerman couldn't pick it there. But not a lot of work over there for Zimmerman. But we've seen enough of him this spring and in the game exhibition the other day, the game today. Any thoughts on Zimmerman over at first base? Looks like he's adjusting well over there to a position change.
Yeah, he made a nice pickup on a ground ball hit to him. He made one scoop of a bounce ball, and there were a couple of throws that Escobar brought him into the runner at first base that I thought he did a good job of pulling down. So, you know, Ryan Zimmerman's a pretty good baseball player, and I think that if Adam Dunn and Demetri Young can figure out how to play first base, I'm pretty sure Ryan Zimmerman will figure it out too.
I can't believe he pulled out Demetri Young. Doghouse Bartolo Colon on the mound, 41-year-old, big Bart, 0-3, 7.02 ERA in spring training, a .348 batting average against. Last year against the Nats, he was 1-4 overall, 1-1, though, with a .386 ERA in D.C., 3 scoreless to start before Bryce Harper took him deep, a 1-0 fastball. Harper just absolutely crushed that ball. Matt Williams talked a little bit after the game about how Harper performs on the big stage and seems to like the spotlight on him. We saw that in the postseason last year. Williams said today that he thinks Harper did the work this offseason to get ready there. So what do you think of Bartolo Colon's start, and more importantly, I guess, Bryce Harper being the only offense for the Nationals today?
Well, you know, I like to poke fun at our friends, the Mets fans, saying that if Bartolo Colon is your ace, your team has problems. That they, of course, could easily come back and say, if Dan Uggla is your starting second baseman, you have problems. So these are a pair of problematic lineups facing each other this early in the season as they sort of struggle with having a bad roster versus having a lot of injuries impacting your roster. So I kind of like the Nats' long-term chances for improving. But, you know, Colon, he's a nice story. He's hung around the league for a long time. He's still serviceable. I'm still going to maintain that if he's your number one starter, your rotation has problems. But he's a canny oldster, getting it done like LeVon used to get done, except with, you know, 2 or 3 miles an hour extra. I was a little reassured to see Michael Taylor look not quite as foolish against him this time around, and actually managed to get a single off of him in that first at bat. So that was reassuring, seeing the youngster actually have a small measure of success against the canny oldster. But between that and Harper, you know, not the Nationals not putting together a lot of offense, which is in a lot of ways sadly reminiscent of what we were seeing at the end of last season. Let's hope that Wirth and Rendon get back working back into that lineup quickly and get up to speed, because otherwise, it is going to be a long and painful first half of the season.
And, Dave, you know Matt Williams isn't going to make excuses for his team, but he did mention twice today that the 1, 2, and 3 hitters from last season aren't in the lineup at this point. I think they're going to have to rely on their pitching early this season to try to get by without Bernard Spann, Anthony Rendon, and Jason Wirth in the lineup, even though Wirth seems like he's close. I haven't been given any dates as to when Rendon and Spann are expected back, so they could be missing those two for a while, and they're going to have to get the offense from somewhere.
Well, you know, I don't necessarily believe in conspiracy theories, but it was easy to notice that of all the injured guys that the Nats have right now, the only one that wasn't at Nats Park today to be introduced and to win his Silver Slugger Award was Anthony Rendon. You know, why wasn't he there? You know, the Spann was there, Wirth was there, Nate McLouth was there, and Nate McLouth, you know, might not play at all this year, you know, with his banged up shoulder again, not responding to the surgery. So, you know,
I think I saw on Twitter that the knee replacement surgery was successful.
Yeah. You know, you hope that Rendon was just down in Vieira and he's doing his rehab and they didn't want to upset the program or whatever. But, you know, the bottom line is Spann and you know, at least Spann is going to fly right back down to go back to extended spring training. So you just hope that Rendon isn't longer than we expect, that he is able to rehab this knee and not have surgery, and you get him back sooner or later, because really he's a vital part of this team. You know, and I don't want to downplay, you know, the Spann injury or the Jason Wirth injury, because they're important players too. But Anthony Rendon is a burgeoning superstar in this league. And if the Nats are without him, you know, past May 1, then you really have to readjust your projections for this team, unfortunately.
Yeah, you really have to think about the Nats going forward that Rendon equals Harper and maybe a little bit better. In terms of their value for the team. So having Rendon out of the lineup, they'd like having Harper out of the lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin Frantz and Chipper Jones took a beating for saying that last year, but by the end of the year, I don't think there's too many people that would disagree with them that Rendon is as advanced a hitter as Harper at this point, if not a little bit more so, which probably shouldn't be too surprising considering he did a lot of time at a major college, a few years at a major college where he was essentially the best hitter in the country when he was healthy. And Harper went from high school to junior college ball right to the pros, essentially. And you know, it's going to take some time to develop. There's some interesting comments about Adam LaRoche about Harper, too. I don't know if you guys saw that Barry Sperluga article this weekend, but basically LaRoche said that Harper has to earn the respect of everyone else in the locker room and also kind of show respect for them, Dave. I wonder what you thought of those comments by LaRoche, who's now with the White Sox, of course, but was with the Nationals the last few years.
Well, it's interesting. You know, everything you hear from the team about Harper is that he's a great teammate and all he wants to do is win, and, you know, that he's still growing into his major league bona fides. But hearing a comment like that from a guy that's not there anymore, especially a very well-respected guy, obviously tells you that
that Harper does have a little bit more growing to do with respect to the respect of his teammates and the respect, frankly, of Major League Baseball players across the league. I mean, he is 3 years in a row now I've been voted the most overrated player in baseball, and while that doesn't necessarily speak to his talent level, it does tell you a little bit of how he is viewed by his peers. And the only real way he can do anything about it is by staying healthy and putting up a full season of stellar numbers. But just to really get back to Rendon really quickly, Patrick, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand that Rendon was such an elevated prospect that he walked more than he struck out in college. Maybe you can verify that for me.
I can verify that. It's a factually accurate statement by you and something I have heard before. So the Nationals lose 3-1. I just want to touch base with both of you on this one before we sign off for the night. Nats will play again on Wednesday, but kind of go outside of the game today for a minute here. All-Star game in D.C. today. Commissioner Rob Manfred was in the nation's capital to announce the worst-kept secret in baseball, basically. All-Star game in D.C. in 2018. Big deal for the D.C. market. Mark Lerner joked today that they've been lobbying for it since about 10 minutes after they got the team in 2006. Baseball is coming to bringing the whole baseball world to the nation's capital in 2018. It's still 3 years away, but they've already got the banners up in Nationals Park. And Doghouse is someone who's kind of been with this team from the start, lives in the nation's capital. I visit here and love it here, but as someone who's grown with this team and followed them since the start, do you think it's a big deal that they're getting the All-Star game?
I think it's an enormous deal. The development that's going on down in this part of the city and the way it's turned around in the last 3 or 4 years has just been remarkable. And it was going to happen with or without the All-Star game, but I think that's going to give an extra little push to it, an extra impetus. And I'm really excited to see how much the neighborhood will have even more developed by the time 2018 comes around, especially because the overwhelming weight of doom that's coming forward to this season will have caused Nats Park itself to burn down, fall over, and sink into a swamp.
Dave, as someone who grew up in the area, kind of saw baseball return to the nation's capital after you were forced to cheer for the Orioles or at least follow them for the years when there was no baseball in D.C., what does it mean to you to see the All-Star game coming here and kind of see that whole area getting revitalized by the park and the team there?
Well, obviously it's a big deal. You know, Washington, D.C., the capital of the entire free world, hasn't had a Major League Baseball All-Star game since 1969 when we were all very young fellows. So it's a great deal, and, you know, it's certainly a few years down the road, but expect the development in that area to be, you know, to have built up and really show Major League Baseball and the world really how first class that area could become. It's a huge deal for the city. And quite frankly, as many times as Mark Lerner joked about it today, how the family's really been pushing for it since they took over the team. You just hope that even though it's you know, a full 3 years down the road, that everybody's there to see it, because they certainly have put in the work to get the All-Star game to D.C.
Yeah, and you can see the excitement in the people who did put that work in today when it was officially announced. There was an eruption of applause by the people who worked as hard as they did to get the All-Star game here. So congratulations to all of them. Congratulations to D.C. Luckily for us as Nationals fans, this is just game one of 162, so we have 161 more games of doom watching the Nationals try to get back to the postseason and defend their NL East crown. That's it for tonight. Nats Nightly, sponsored by the District Sports page at federalbaseball.com. I miss doing this, guys. Great to be back and talking with you, and we'll talk to you again on Wednesday.
Well, Nats.